This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
Reading fast, and that night she died. A week later, I was talking with her family, and I said, we were just talking about, we were all mourning. Actually, the night after she died, we were all in the front courtyard here where the wheelbarrow is, and she was out on a cot under a sheet. And the family was taking the children and doing this airplane swooshing across the cot and saying, guess who's underneath there? It's your mommy. I couldn't believe it. That is not a Salvadoran way of responding to death. And I said, I don't understand this. A week later, then, I was talking with a family member, and I said, we were just sorry. And they said, well, you know what happened, didn't you? Ends up that Sandra and another woman were in competition for the same man. And this other woman went to a person who places curses, who are still strongly believed in El Salvador. And what Sandra understood was that this curse would leave her with an amputated leg. And she would be walking up and down the streets of a resbaladero, and people would laugh at her. And so she decided that wasn't going to happen. And it didn't happen. So when the family was doing this airplane thing, they were actually celebrating the fact that she didn't give in to the curse. So, why missions? Missions are all about Sandra and those people who don't understand the grace of God, the personal love of God for them, the God that intervenes and changes lives and brings hope where there is none. So what is the theological, biblical basis of missions? Well, we all know that God made man in his image, and he made us for relationship. He made us for, oh, now stop this. Excuse me and my machine. He made us for relationship. Well, we blew it. And so between us and God, there was a big wall called sin, and our whole world fell apart. But God, from the beginning, sought for ways to find relationship, even through that wall. In the Old Testament, he found that way through a very localized group of people. But even among that group of people, only one person met God personally. The rest of the people heard him through thunderings and lightnings and murmurings and earthquakes and mysterious temple furniture. They understood God as a mysterious, frightening, distant God. Then comes the New Testament. And no longer were people staying away from God. They were pushing close to God. They were cramming to get to him. God was not distant and harsh and earthquakey. He was tender and touching and gentle and healing. But very few people still got to meet God. There were thousands of people that met him, and thousands of people that got to understand God. But still, there were many, the majority of the world didn't get to know God. Well, okay, fine. So Jesus went back to the Father, and then we had the church age. And think about what happened then. God said, well, let's have people meet God personally. Through human touch and human face, I will put myself in them. And our grand joy is to be able to meet people one-on-one with a human touch and the human face and the relationship of redemption with God. That is the joy of ministry. And I want to, Paul just jumps over with joy too. He says, but thanks be to God who in Christ always leads us in triumphant procession and through us. Imagine this. Through us, spreads the fragrance of the knowledge of him everywhere. So that's the biblical basis of mission. Why medical missions? Well, we know about Jesus. Jesus, our model, frequently used healing to proclaim the good news of Jesus, of the Father. People needed to understand who the Father was. In fact, if you look at his theme verse, which is also the theme verse of our clinic, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because look at all the things that are personal touching. He anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. And how did he preach the gospel to the poor? He fed them. He healed them when nobody else would touch them. To heal the brokenhearted, how did he do that? Well, when the widow was crying, he raised the son. When Mary and Martha were crying, he called Lazarus out. To proclaim liberty to the captives, how did he do that? Well, when a woman with gynecological problems for 12 years and broke, he called her out of that captivity, to recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed. Through centuries, the gospel has spread through medical missions. The initial apostles continued Jesus' pattern of healing and teaching to explain who the Father was. But as missions went on after that, in the first centuries, the gospel followed medical missions frequently. But especially since the 1800s, the medical missions have explained who God is to people in a way that has been extremely effective. Think about India, think about Africa, think about Asia. I really apologize for my machine. God has spread missions through medicine. Through medicine, people also see the true nature of God through medical missions. In Rome, the typical Roman citizen threw the unwanted people out into the streets, the children they didn't want, the ill, the elderly. It was the believers who went through and gathered those people up and cared for them. In fact, Julian, one of the earlier emperors, said, if we want to eradicate Christianity from our empire, we're going to have to do a better job than the Christians at caring for the disenfranchised of our culture. When the plague started coming around, both in Carthage and in Roman times, and in Europe in later times, 1700s, the physicians would run off. And it was the believers who would come around and take care of the people with the plague. It was the believers who would take the bodies and bury them. It was the believers who cared for the families. Because the physicians would be out in the country homes because they didn't want to get infected. The believers said, you are in the image of God. I care about you. If I get sick, there's a greater well-being. People see the true nature of God through medical missions. Medical ministries allow for, I'm often amazed at this, interpersonal openness and confidence. I go from, I don't know you, to I know your deepest secrets, sometimes in 3 minutes. It's just amazing. I would never do that on the street. I also meet people at their felt need. My felt need may be that I'm infertile. My felt need might be that my husband is being abusive to me. But I get to meet my people at their felt needs. And my felt needs opens the door to presenting the absolute solution, not an easy solution, not a manipulative solution, but a solution that says, but I care for you as a representative of the one who really, really cares for you. And it's a physical demonstration of the grace of God. Now, some of you have told me the answer to this question, and the rest of you, I don't know. Some of you, I know, are called to medical missions. And as I say, the rest of you, I don't know. So we've talked about the biblical basis of missions. We've talked about why medical missions. How can I prepare my heart for medical missions? I'm going to suggest that one of the ways of preparing our hearts is going back to kindergarten and learning the vowels. A early missionary in Japan said, tell the students to give up small ambition. And he's talking about the heart, preparing the heart, to come eastward to preach the gospel of Christ. That is a burning desire of mine. If God is calling you to stay here, then that's not a small ambition. But if you're just kind of going with the routine, think about, is this a big ambition that the Lord wants me to have? Or is there a bigger ambition that he has for me? So let's start with the A. The vow A is that we actively affirm that our life is not our own, and that to present our body to God for his use is a reasonable act of worship. We know those wonderful verses, but they become so true. Don't we know that our body is not our own? It's a temple of the Holy Ghost. We've been bought with a price. Therefore, what we do with our body is to glorify God. And I urge you, brothers, in view of God's mercies, to offer your bodies a living sacrifice. Just as the sacrifices in the Old Testament were presented to be consumed for God's worship, so we are. So we actively affirm that our lives are not our own, and that to present our bodies, and as medical people, that's what we offer as a reasonable act of worship to God. So we are available to God's call. This is going to keep me moving along, I tell you. If anybody knows how to fix this, I'd be grateful. The E is to explore God's working in the world. And in your handouts, I've given you a number of resources, medical missionary books and literature, sermons. There's some internet sites that you can have. You might consider friendships with current missionaries. Whatever you can do to kind of explore what God is doing out in the world with medical missions. Some of you, a number of you, are thinking about education. Let me just say a few words about education. When you go into medical missionary missions, you don't know where you're going right now as in training. Go for the broadest medical education that you can, I suggest. Go really on strong assessment skills. What your ears, your eyes, your hands can do, learn that. You know, kind of what the old docs used to do. Because when you get out to the field, you won't have CT scans and MRI scans and PET scans, and you won't have everything else you'd like to have. Consider a tropical medicine course. I didn't take that opportunity. There are some in the States. There's one in London, but in Tulane and West Virginia, both have good ones. Learn practical cross-cultural skills. Especially a good way of doing that is to learn to develop friendships with internationals here in the States. Learn how language differs amongst internationals. What's strange about North American ways among internationals? How do they view healthcare? How do they view power? Some educational red flags. If you go into education, in the beginning, as you're going through, in the beginning stages, I think you're going to find a lot of people who share your humanitarian desires. But as education progresses and becomes harder and more of our lives are invested in it, I think there becomes a selfishness that, you know, I'm working hard, I deserve this for myself. And we develop a very constricted worldview. I'm studying for me and for my family and for my future. There is going to be more and more of a sense of deserved reward in terms of finances, which I just mentioned, but also in terms of sexuality and entertainment. I work hard. Sexuality is a way of pleasuring myself. So is entertainment. And we, as believers, need to maintain a high view of those. There's also a large sense of tolerance, where tolerance is the ultimate goal in education. I'm not talking about being abrasive in our faith. I'm just saying that we are saying that Jesus Christ has an answer that is his alone. Next, invest income and energy. Even as a student, even when you're poor, our treasure is still where our treasure is. That's where our heart is. Think about supporting a mission actively, even in training. I say, I can give you some hints, at least, about medical missions. Think about volunteering at an inner city mission. When I was a resident, my fellow residents were doing moonlighting. That meant they went out to the little country emergency rooms, and they made good money. That didn't fit what I thought I wanted to do, but there was a clinic in the basement of a Black Methodist church close to us. So I went and volunteered there on Tuesday evenings, and I learned an awful lot about internationals, uninsured families, addicts. It was a good way of starting. They're also on your handout. CCHF is a place that can put you in contact with inner city missions here domestically. If I would have changed something in my training, I would have probably attended more medical mission conferences, because that's where there's a meeting of the mind. People who are already doing missions are getting together, they're talking to each other. They're medical people. There's also the groups who support these groups. And I didn't know about a lot of those. I just went to one half a year ago and discovered all sorts of resources that I hadn't even been aware of. Finally, do difficult things. When I was a resident and a student, I had two difficult things. I had moved from Kansas City to Wichita from a furnished apartment to an unfurnished apartment, and I was a student. I was poor, you know, students are poor. And so I didn't have any furnishings. So I came to this house and I was thinking about, well, you know, I work pretty hard. I think I deserve a decent bed to sleep in and kind of a pretty bed, kind of nice. And I was kind of thinking about, well, I can borrow a little bit and have a nice bed in my bedroom, and well, that's okay. And my heart wouldn't rest. I just didn't feel like that was what was pleasing to the Lord at that time. So I kept, I mean, this is stupid. I'm just being oversensitive, and no, the Lord wants me to have, I couldn't get past that. So finally I said, fine, Lord. And I threw my sleeping bag on the floor, and it was a wooden floor, not real soft. And I lay down and slept. Well, trust me, in the morning I got up and I knew I was going into missions. One of my friends came over and they were aghast. This is ridiculous. So they brought their camping cot over. And for the next 10 years, I slept on that cot. And trust me, every morning when I made my bed, I knew I was going into missions. Well, I was also, remember, I was poor, and my cars, well, my dad always found these used cars. He found this Chevy Caprice. Chevy Caprice with a red vinyl top. And in the Kansas sun, the red vinyl top does nice little curlicues, and you know, it kind of splits open. Well, my Chevy Caprice had even a better idea. It leaked around the windshield. So my friends trying to help this poor medical, well, I was a resident at that point, or I may have been in practice in inner city, I don't remember. They put some black goop around to make it keep from leaking. Well, the leaking didn't stop, but now it leaked black goop. And so if during the middle of the night it happened to rain, well, one of the leaks was right where I was driving. And so I would get up, and I have these nice pastel Amish dresses on, you know? And I'd go in. I was parking in the doctor's parking lot between the BMWs and the Jaguars and my Caprice with my very strange Amish garb. And now the strange Amish garb had black wet on the back of it, and I was trying to figure out how I was going to go to morning rounds in this. Thankfully, I had a long white coat. But difficult things. These things kept me going into missions. Finally, consider short-term missions. I was freaked out that medicine was going to swallow me up. When I was a first-year medical student, probably 15 of us met every Monday night at Christian Medical Dental Association to read together, to pray together, to focus our energies on the gospel and the kingdom. But by the time I graduated, two of us went to international missions and two stayed in domestic missions. And the rest, I'm not sure they meant to go where they ended up. But one of the things I did as a fourth year student, I wrote a missionary in El Salvador and said, could you find me a place to work in El Salvador so I have some idea what I'm aiming toward in residency? She found me the public hospital, which is now the hospital to which I send patients. This is the intensive care unit. The people, I saw children with tetanus and measles and mumps, which none of those I had seen in the States. They were dying. And there was no ventilator out there. So the nurses would periodically run from the hospital, the inside of the hospital, out to the outside of the hospital to bag these kids. Obviously, they didn't live real long. This is a contrast. This is me with delivering a new child and my nursery up in the States. And the mother and I were great friends. We just had such a good relationship. This is the empty bed just several days before I left for Wichita again. In that bed had been a malnourished child, and I don't understand exactly how things went, but the sheets were already yellow by the time they got put on the bed. This child didn't have diapers, and he was malnourished, so he had diarrhea. And unfortunately, one couldn't always tell where his plate of refried beans and his diarrhea started. Somebody asked this over lunch, and this is now the answer. They said, so what happens if I run into big medical debts? The answer is, oh, as little as possible. That's one of the things I think the Lord was doing in his severe mercy. was saying, don't get bogged down with medical debts, with debts for common living. The second thing is there are programs out for people who are actively going into missions, into medical missions. MedSend, again, these are in your handouts, will help repay your medical debts. The United States government actually has programs for people who are going into humanitarian care. They will often forgive medical debts while you're in humanitarian care. If you come back, you will then end up repaying whatever part you haven't paid yet. That was the O, we're still on the vowels, and U is understand the needs. One-fifth of the world is without medical care. That doesn't mean there's not a clinic somewhere, but it means I can't get to the clinic, or when I get there, there's no doctor, or there's no medicines, or they send me to the hospital and I can't get to the hospital. Whatever happens, there's not medical care. Another missionary said, they're making a living when they should be making a life. Now the next U is understand the provisions. Hudson Taylor, one of my heroes, says, God's work done in God's way will never lack God's supply. Ida Scudder says, when she was an early missionary, a female, one of the first female physicians to India, and didn't want to become a physician. Her father was a physician. She did not want that. God kind of roped her into that, and she said, when God has told you what to do, he has already told you he can. You can. Again, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed every day when you're studying, when you're around other people who have real different goals than you do in training. Keep being transformed by the renewing of your mind, by testing that you may discern what the will of God is, what's good, what's acceptable, and what's perfect. So we've talked about the biblical basis of missions, why medical missions, how I can prepare for missions, and then how do I start? Seriously, can somebody fix this for me? I think it's going on automatic. It's kind of distracting me. Well, that was pretty simple. Thank you.
I don't know.
See if that works. Hudson Taylor again. Okay, so let's go back to where we were. How do I start? You know, starting toward missions is a big goal, especially when we're kind of simple, humble Anabaptists and don't do these kind of big things. How do I start? Hudson Taylor says, I have found that there are three stages to every work of God. First, it is impossible. Then it is difficult. And then it is done. Dave Stevens, another physician, head of Christian Medical and Dental Association, says, when you're facing an impossible task, ask yourself, so if this task were to be done, what would be the first step I would need to do it, to have it be accomplished, and then take that first step? I want to go with Abraham on his journey and follow him through some ways of how we might start toward missions. You remember that Abraham was a pretty wealthy businessman in Ur, and God called him from his comfortable life in Ur to something far bigger. But I don't know that he felt it was far bigger at the beginning. So how do I start? First, you start thinking like Abraham. Then you saddle up like Abraham, and then you follow Abraham's steps, and this is not working again. Okay. Thinking like Abraham. Abraham said, Canaan or bust. I don't mean barging through closed doors, but he was going to Canaan. He said, God's land, not my land. You know, it says in Hebrews that he never owned any land except for Sarah's burial ground. But he said, God's land, not my land. And he was thinking, it's not my land right now, but it's for all the people coming after me. That's their land. Then it said he went out not knowing where he went. And those of us starting out on these things, we don't know where we're going. But it's my unknowing and his all-knowing. It says that Abraham got up and he took all of his possessions. He became impermanent. And it says he started living in tents with his descendants. He had been probably coming from a very comfortable place, I'm assuming, a middle upper classer to tents in a nomadic life, my impermanence, but his eternity. So let's go with Abraham and his camel and the covenant. I wanted our camel to be that daily determination to follow the vision and call, regardless of the daily discomforts, which are like the comfortable routines my ex-urbanites are experiencing. You know, they're back and they're getting up and their wives are scrambling their eggs, and then they're going to work, and then they're coming home and reading the paper and going to bed. You know, my life isn't like that as Abraham. I'm going on my camel, and he's got a sore foot today, and I don't know how many dust storms I'm coming into. I am determined to follow the vision and call, regardless of the daily discomforts, which are unlike the comfortable routines my ex-urbanites are experiencing. I'm going to get up today and ride my camel. The covenant is that which reminds me of my pact between Jehovah of the universe and me. As you remember, Abraham's covenant was the circumcision. We may have our own daily reminders, but it's my daily pact between Jehovah. So what might take you off your camel or keep you from it? Well, safety. Rick Dorian says, this is Rick Dorian's acronym. The first thing he says is security. You know, it's pretty comfortable. The closer one gets to a decent bank account and to getting out of debt, the more easy it is to go, this is dumb, going out in the mission field being this much in debt, or it's dumb to not think about my retirement. It's irresponsible. I hear that, and sometimes I feel that. The second part of A is affluence, which goes very much with security. I might suggest that another A, and actually one of the ones I found more for our people and for many people in the United States, is adventure. People go to short-term missions. They go to Jamaica, and oh, they've experienced the poverty, and it's been so neat to treat all these lovely people. And we come home, and I've done my missions, and I've helped the world. But you know, missions and caring for the poor are really not an adventure. An adventuresome spirit doesn't last real long when it comes to true missions. Family is a huge thing. Again, Dave Stevens says that if God is calling you to missions and he wants you to get married, there's somebody out there that he has for you. Wait for that person. And finally, we've talked about entertainment briefly, I think, in other sessions too. God doesn't tend to scream over noises. He tends to be pretty quiet. He talks very clearly. But it's very easy for us to let noise, that's work and other entertainment, crowd out the voice of God. So don't play it safe. So I've prepared my heart with the vows. I'm on my camel. I thought about the covenant. I decide not to play it safe. So how do I start the journey? Let's go with Abraham's five-step program. He only had five instead of 12. First, he started, and I talked about Dave Stevens' quote, when you face an impossibility, ask yourself what would be the first thing you would need to do if it were to happen, and then do it. You start. Two, you be tenacious. You know, I think Abraham could have rolled over in his tent some days after a hard ride and go, you know, this is not good for my body to be on this camel. It's really going to age me too fast. I think I'm going to stay in the tent today. It's not the way to get to Canaan. We stick on the camel. Next, we envision. It's said that Abraham saw a city with foundations. While he was in tent, he saw a city with foundations whose builder and maker was God. He envisioned what God had for him. Next, prayer. Every place that Abraham went was, he built an altar. And I think what happens in our journey is that our journey changes us, and we need to reestablish kind of our relationship with God in that new environment. So I really encourage us in every new step to build a new altar. And then steady. I think the final attitude of camel life is that we settle into unsettledness. And I think we learn survival skills. We try to stay healthy. We try to stay focused. We strive to continue learning, to continue ministering where we're at. So, okay, we've learned the vows. We've tried not to play it safe. We're following Abraham's five-step program. So then, folks, be strong and very courageous. And happy travels. Can we sing this song together? Some of you know the summons. Can you just take it and pass it out?
Are you going to display it?
Actually, it's not displayable. It's on the back, but...
Let me turn and fall. Does anyone have any questions for Jen? I think you have a few minutes if you would like. Any explanations that you'd like her to give? Thank you, Jenna, for sharing your vision with us. It was tremendous, very challenging. I think all of us can appreciate the sacrifice that she has made and that we all need to make. We need to give our all to him, wherever he's called us to. So I think you're dismissed. I'm sure Jenna will be around for 1 minute if you have questions that you can ask her afterwards. I think it's time for supper, actually.
She brought out always little as possible.
Do you want them to pass in their coffees?
No, they can have them. I think.
The extra these.
Okay.
You had a bunch of.
Shoot!
There weren't enough.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.